Hi everyone and welcome to Black All Year. I am Steph Aduse and in this podcast we explore Black history, Black experience, Black successes and we celebrate ourselves all year round. Today we are going to be talking about a topic that can be really uncomfortable to talk about, but it's really crucial if we're going to move forwards towards a more just and inclusive society. White fragility. So for those of you that don't know, the term white fragility was coined by Dr. Robin DiAngelo, who is an educator, researcher and author who studies whiteness and race relations. And in itself, whiteness may be a new term to some of you, but if blackness is a thing, and it is, then so is whiteness. White fragility describes a really defensive reaction that many white people have when conversations about racism arise. It's a reaction that, whether you know it or whether it's unknowingly, it protects you from the discomfort of confronting systemic racism. And at the same time, it actually silences the voices of Black and minoritized people. So we're going to unpack why it happens and the impact it has, and most importantly, how to work through it. So let's start with what white fragility actually means. And I'll probably give you a little bit of an example of when some of this pops up or what people tend to say. Dr. DiAngelo's research suggests that white people are really insulated from race-based stress. And that's mainly because they predominantly have a white experience and environment. So the communities, schools, workplaces are predominantly white. The people that they mix with are predominantly white. And therefore, they're not exposed to racism in the same way that those of us that are Black and minoritized are. And when they're confronted with discussions about racism, especially around their role or the way they benefit from it, they might then respond defensively, and that can show up as denial, anger, or withdrawal. And that's a really key characteristic of white fragility. I've recently been in a conversation where somebody said, you know, white people find it really difficult to talk about race. My reaction to that was to say, well, get over it. I didn't, because that would have been inappropriate in the context. But actually, that is something that you hear quite often about how uncomfortable white people feel about the whole discussion of race and racism. And that in itself, just that statement in itself, is enough to shut down the conversation. It can make, and in that instance, did make, all of the Black people in the room shut up and be quiet. Because it would have been inappropriate in that context for us to do otherwise. So you might want to think about it this way. Many white people are really raised with the idea that racism is an issue of bad people or of that person did that thing. It's about an individual action. It's not about systems. You know, somebody was racist. Somebody did a racist thing. Not that organisation is racist, that practice is racist. So when they hear about white privilege or unconscious biases or systemic racism, it can be really threatening because it disrupts their view of themselves as good people or moral people or kind people or whatever label you want to put on it. So what we see with this white fragility is this really defensive reaction. And as I say, it stops the conversation from moving forward. And it's really important that you recognise that white fragility isn't about the individual being bad or good. It's about a lack of tolerance for racial stress. Racial stress is a product of living in a society where white people are rarely asked to confront their race in the way that people of colour are. So white people don't have to think about being white most of the time. Black people are. Therefore, we get the racial stress. White fragility is the result of white people not really having to think about their ethnicity. And there's a good example of this in one of the anti-racist discussion episodes where my friend Rosaria has to pause for a very long time in answer to the question of, when did you first become aware of your race? So what does it look like in real life? And it can show up in lots of different ways. I'm going to give you an example from a couple of years ago. And this was actually on what was then Twitter and when I was on Twitter. And somebody tweeted this. The young people, I am fortunate to know, don't see colour. Their classmates and friends are exactly that, classmates. They talk about Abdullah, Mustafa, Rohini and Amal. I'm slowly hoping our younger generations are embracing other cultures. What a lovely tweet. Really lovely. Apart from one thing. So I just picked up on that one thing. And I said, please don't use the phrase, don't see colour. They see it. They just don't discriminate on the basis of it. My colour and race is part of my culture, my experience, my heritage. And to not see it is to not see me. So, you know, when people say, I don't see colour, yes, they see colour. Of course they see colour. If you don't see colour, you don't see colour in anything. You don't see a red rose. You don't see the yellow sun. You don't see anything. People see the colour of my skin. They can choose then how they react to me on the basis of it. So this individual came back and said that she was sorry that her tweet had offended me, but there was no inference of difference between their friends. They didn't see any difference. And then I thought that this was a positive post. Sorry you don't find it so. So instantly what you start to get is this, oh, I did a good thing and you don't see it as that. I hope you can hear that bit of fragility starting to come through. So I then went back and said, it's really positive that they don't discriminate on the basis of ethnicity. But of course they know that some of their friends have brown skin, might follow different religions, have different cultural practices. They see the colour, of course they do. And I also then said that I didn't say any of it to attack them, but just to help them understand how phrases like don't see colour really negates huge parts of who we are. And can actually infer that there's something wrong with the colour of our skin. And then the response was, well, I'm sorry I said anything. I merely felt my conversations with my nieces and my pals was exceedingly positive. I've learned now not to share my experiences and apologise. It's evoked a reaction. Now, my tone has probably told you what I think of that response, but to me, that sounded very, very defensive. I did have to respond. And I actually said, a better way to respond to my point would have been, I've never looked at it that way. Thank you for highlighting it, and I'll think about it. But isn't it great that these young people don't discriminate? And my response would have been, yes, bloody wonderful. That person then still couldn't see what they've done wrong, but said they'll choose their subjects closely. And actually, I offered to discuss it off Twitter so that I could help them to understand. And then they said, perhaps we just don't. Perhaps we just don't do that. I felt this was a positive tweet. That's all. That's all my tweet was about. Nothing else. They also then went on to tweet separately that they would just be positive in future, just be sarcastic and silly and not tweet anything else. So there was that real defensiveness. That is an example of white fragility. People will see things like, I don't see colour. They will say, I've got black friends. I'm not racist. They might think that's neutral or positive, but they're said to avoid engaging with real conversation. And why do they respond that way? It goes back to that discomfort, that real need to protect somebody, yourself. For some, it can be really, really painful to confront that you may have unconsciously benefited from or contributed to a system that disadvantages others. And since many white people haven't ever had to think about race in any meaningful way, that discomfort can feel really new and overwhelming. But the only way that you get through that discomfort is by sitting with it, leaning into it, and then real change can start to happen. The consequences of white fragility are really far-reaching. When people shut down conversations about race or they dismiss the lived experiences of Black people, they're not just protecting themselves from discomfort, they're silencing our voices. They're preventing progress and they're deepening division. Can you imagine a workplace scenario where a Black person shares their experiences with subtle but real kind of impactful forms of discrimination, microaggressions, if you want to call them that, like being mistaken for someone in a less senior role or feeling overlooked in meetings. And then a white colleague responds by saying, "I'm sure it wasn't intentional," or "I don't think race is involved there." It can feel really dismissive and invalidating. It minimizes that Black employee's experience and it perpetrates a cycle where uncomfortable truths are really just kind of swept under the carpet rather than addressed. And it makes us think, why did we bother? White fragility also plays a part in maintaining real structural inequalities. If conversations about systemic racism are continually shut down, then the system itself goes unchallenged and it won't change. Real, lasting change only happens when enough people are willing to think about their roles and contribute to something better. Now that we've discussed what white fragility is and why it's such a problem, let's talk about ways to work through it because I want to give some solutions to it. And the first thing is, it's a journey and it takes commitment and it takes patience. The first thing is you're going to have to lean into that discomfort. Being uncomfortable is part of the process. We do not grow in comfortable places. It's okay not to have the answers or to feel unsure. All that you need to do is stay engaged, listen, and learn. You can also work through that white fragility by really listening, actively listening, and validating the experiences of Black and minoritized people without needing to defend yourself. It's really hard, but button your lip, sit on your hands, do whatever you need to do. Just listen without judgment, without rushing to explain yourself, because that can go a long way. Just being heard and validated for a person of colour can actually feel blooming revolutionary. Education is also a major part of things, and you need to take time to read books, watch documentaries, listen to podcasts like this one. Just consume content that broadens your perspective. And the goal isn't to consume things so that you can solve racism and prove you're a good person. You're not the white savior. It's about learning to develop empathy, to understand the bigger picture, learn about perspectives that might not have been part of your own experience. And I've had to do some of this. I am light-skinned, being mixed heritage. I don't understand the experiences of a Black woman who is darker skinned than me. I have to sit and listen and absorb and develop that empathy and that understanding of their experience because I carry privilege with me that means that I can help amplify their voices. So this isn't something I haven't had to do myself. We all have to do it in lots of different arenas. But practice your self-awareness. When you feel yourself feeling uncomfortable or defensive, pause and think, what was that about? Why do I feel that way? What am I feeling and why? Do I feel guilty? Do I feel scared? Do I feel embarrassed? Do I feel blamed? If you can really name and acknowledge the emotions, it's really powerful and it'll help you process them more constructively, which means you're not shutting people down. One of the best ways to break through white fragility that is actually quite crippling at the moment is to become an active ally. Allies play a huge role in pushing conversations forward in spaces where Black and minoritized people might not be present or and this is really important, we may not feel safe to speak. So that means speaking up when you witness racist comments or microaggressions, and it means calling out the subtle biases and the systemic racism that might go unchallenged otherwise. But allyship is a thing. It's a doing word. It's a, what's that, a verb. It's about action. You can't just believe in equity and inclusion in private. It's got to be something you do in public. It's got to be something you practice, even when it's uncomfortable, and especially if it's inconvenient. You can't leave that to Black and minoritized people to do that work. You need to be there alongside us and sometimes instead of us doing that stuff. Okay, so a little taster about white fragility and hopefully some things that you can take on board so that we can kind of unpack white fragility, understand why it's pervasive, and work together to confront it. Because confronting white fragility isn't about blame. It's not about saying you're wrong. It's about really taking an honest look at ourselves and our society so we can make it better for everyone. Thank you for listening to Black All Year. I'm Steffa Doucet, and I appreciate you listening and learning and growing with me. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review the podcast and share it with someone that you think might benefit from it. And I'll speak to you very soon. I hope you've enjoyed that episode of Black All Year. It would be great if you could subscribe and review, because not only will it make sure that you get the content, but it'll help other people to find it too. Take care.